Hello, everybody, and welcome back.
Welcome, welcome.
This is Nerdspastics for the week of May 25th, and as always, we are here to discuss this week's news and gaming, film and television, and everything in between. I'm Sean.
And I'm Tristan.
And we have a special guest this week. This is Mr. Scott Lovejoy.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here.
So this is a Loot Crate week for the month of May, and we'll bring that to you guys later on, as well as a video on our Facebook page. But let's start things off, as normally, with a little toasty video game news.
Toasty!
All right, so first thing on the docket is Resident Evil Zero HD Remastered was announced. Another Resident Evil HD remake. How do we feel about this, guys? I mean, it seems like they're doing it with all of that. Sooner or later, they're going to remake Resident Evil 6, which is already in HD at this point.
Well, they've already done that. There's all the rumors we talked about last week of them doing a re-release of Gears of War, which was on the 360. So that was already in HD, but now it's going to be in HD-er.
HD-er.
I feel like it just ruins all of my childhood memories. Like when they brought GoldenEye back. For I think the Wii, it just
they did, yeah.
Like I don't understand the pull of doing it.
But that was a new game, right? That wasn't a remaster of the original.
I think they released the original.
Oh, they did as well
on Wii. I think it was like a download or whatnot. But I feel like you should just let them be. It's the same with movies. I think, which we're complaining about constantly. But
yeah, no, I'm gonna be honest. When the first Resident Evil was like remastered for GameCube and stuff, I was okay with that. Like, yep. It was kind of cool. But now that the point they've gone through like almost all of them, they're kind of like slowly going through. And the fact that they did Resident Evil 1 twice, redone it twice. They redid it on the GameCube, then redid it again for the PlayStation. Like, that was a little...
Well, it's sort of like it's a cash cow at this point. You don't have to do much to re-release it at this point. And I imagine they just have conversion tools to just change all those over and just make bank, because they don't have to do much to them. Like, oh, update the skins and
up-res the graphics a little bit.
Right. And then here you go. And then here's another $50, whatever it costs to sell one of those.
Well, Resident Evil Zero, as you know, like 2002, was only released on GameCube, which was weird for a Resident Evil game, because I remember that like it used to be on PlayStation all the time. The Resident Evil Zero came out, it was only for GameCube.
And it's just a weird exclusive for Nintendo to have, because they've always been more of the kid-friendly one, and all of a sudden, Resident Evil.
Yeah, just on Nintendo GameCube. But I'll be honest, it was a really good game. I liked it a lot.
I never played Zero.
Zero was good. It was a prequel to Resident Evil, obviously.
Hasn't that always been kind of the criticism of Nintendo, is it doesn't have many adult games?
Yeah.
I mean, it has good games on every system, but there's never really an adult game, so this is kind of a throw to that, which they need more of that.
And that kind of story extends through to today with the Wii U, similar type of thing. They don't really have a whole lot of adult games.
Right,
Like they had like the Zombie U launch title, but beyond that, I don't think they really have much for like serious or M-rated games.
Yeah, most of my Nintendo memories, I think like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. That's pretty much it. Like that's the only adult games at the time.
Well, little known is so far, Capcom has not released a lot. There's nothing that whether there's going to be a new version of the game, if there's going to be something in it that's new or anything. It just seems like it might be a straight just rip remake. But it's slated to be released in early 2016 as of right now.
Yeah, I doubt they would put too much into it for extra content. They're busy working on Resident Evil 7 or whatever the next one is going to be. That's going to be the bulk of their resources. Yeah.
So in other news, we have delayed news, which is going backwards generation instead of remastering. We're down-converting here for Mortal Kombat X for PS3 and Xbox 360. Apparently it's been delayed again.
Yeah, and this is weird since... it's already out on current gens, and this was supposed to come out in June, but now places like Amazon and whatnot are just listing it as December 31st, 2015. So it's probably a placeholder. So eventually it'll come out this year, most likely, but you got to figure it's not much of a priority for them.
No, not really. I mean, and especially since you see all the news that they're actually just making new skins and releasing new DLC more than anything for the new consoles, not really anything on this, you know, going backwards.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised if it just, like, turns into vaporware, because at this point, who are you selling to? There's really not that much market left, because most people have moved on, I think. You know.
Most people.
Most people. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm certainly in that boat. I haven't jumped into the new stuff yet.
Except for Tristan.
Yeah. But I wonder if this is gimped in any way on the 360 and PS3 version versus the current gen systems, because I mean Shadow of Mordor, that was kind of the famous one for like having a lot of features cut out for it in order for it to run on the previous gen consoles. I wonder if anything has to be cut out of this to work on the previous gen.
That's a good point. I mean, one of the reasons I didn't buy Shadow of Mordor for 360 or PS3 was how different it was from the PS4 and Xbox One copies. So it's definitely like a must when buying. So you have to wonder what they are trying to cut out maybe or changing with this one to make it work on the last gen consoles.
Yeah, because we're getting to the point now where it's pretty much most new games that are either coming out or announced are only for the new systems. We're kind of finally leaving behind that in-between era where it's like, all right, it's coming out for both, and it, you know, kind of it's next gen but not really next gen since it was originally probably designed for the 360 and PS3.
So in Nintendo news now, which is the Humble Bundle, which I don't know if nobody really knows about this, if other people don't know, Humble Bundle is basically a thing where you pay pretty much what you want, and you get a set price, and you get tons of games. But for the first time, Nintendo is doing it for console games, which is definitely a big thing.
And the other notable thing about Humble Bundle is you can split up how your contribution is divided. So the whole thing is like it's for charity, but you can decide like how much of what you're paying is going to go to charity or the developers or to Humble Bundle themselves.
You can make it all go to charity or all go to the developers. I know I made it all go to charity when I did mine for Star Wars. So
this surprises me. Oh, this is cool. I think this is really good for Nintendo to do that. Nintendo's interesting in the development world because they're not as open as the other platforms. If you develop indie games, especially using some of the nicer tools that are out there, Nintendo usually isn't an option for you to export to, because there are a couple of programs you can use where you can basically build the program and then export to any format you want, any platform. Unfortunately, Nintendo usually isn't one of the platforms because of how well they lock down their kind of developer stuff. So it's cool to see kind of this indie thing, and hopefully that'll open it up more, because like both PlayStation and Xbox and obviously Android and iOS platforms all have a way to sell for indie independent developer to sell, and Nintendo really doesn't have that in the same way. I guess they're trying to get there, but you know, they like to lock their stuff down a lot more, their properties a lot more.
Yeah,
which might actually go with the fact that they're lagging behind.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anyone needs third-party support, it's Nintendo. So that's interesting that they lock down their tools a lot more than the other systems.
Yeah, I think that definitely points to, you know, not being able to dev all that crazy stuff or doing that fun stuff with it.
Yeah, but I think it's notable that this is the first time, because previously all the Humble Bundles, they've been PC-based or, you know, Mac and Linux as well.
Okay, just go through Steam, get a code, and
Or sometimes through Origin, but one of those PC-related gaming systems. So the fact that this is the first time we've seen, like, a home console on it makes me hopeful that they'll do more of that. They'll expand into PlayStation and the Xbox brands as well.
It would be interesting if the only reason that they're able to do this is because they completely control their own system and don't have indie developers. Maybe perhaps Xbox and PS3 look at it, or PlayStation look at it as not wanting to because they already have their own stuff going on.
Yeah, so. It might be that fact that Microsoft and Sony have all these other contracts for independent with the other games like you're talking about, and then like Nintendo's like, okay, we don't really
we control everything, yeah. So yeah,
we'll just throw it out. Yeah,
yeah. So it might be like the licensing agreements and the way like profits are already split between their online store and those developers for those indie games, since they're all download related, and then so how would that split work if they were to sell it basically through a third party, not directly? Mm-hmm. Because then Microsoft would be like, well, we're not making any money on this. Why would we do this if it's
exactly
if it's the Humble Bundle just split between the developers and the charity?
So that'll be our toasty news for the day.
Toasty!
All right.
And then we got some E3 updates. So E3 is coming up soon.
It's almost here.
So there should be a lot of good news out of that. But a couple of interesting little things of note is Sony is actually going to live stream its press conference to select movie theaters across the country, and they're giving away tickets for free to this.
It's good that they're giving away free. I would really hope they wouldn't charge for it.
Yeah, that'd be pretty brutal if they charge for it. I'm an Apple fanboy, but I wouldn't go into a movie theater to watch any of the Apple press conferences. I just wouldn't do it. So
yeah,
but I mean, for this, like, at first I was like, why would you bother? But then again, like, okay, if you never have the chance to travel to E3 and go there, this is probably the closest you could get to the E3 experience. It's like, all right, you have some friends, you go to a theater, you're watching this on a giant screen with surround sound, and you. I think that's as close as you could get to an actual E3 press conference.
Is there anything coming out of E3 for Sony specifically that would warrant going to a theater to watch it, or is it just going to be
going to be their E3 press conference?
Right, but there's nothing special that they're releasing or announcing that would be like, oh my god, I'm happy I was in the theater seeing that instead of on my.
So far, nothing. I'm guessing we might. Maybe Uncharted. Right. We might see a new Uncharted.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to have some big announcement. They have to, because they actually came out. It was like a financial call saying they admitted that their first party lineup of games has been sparse for this year.
So yeah, it is intriguing of what this means for what they'll bring.
Right.
I mean, it could be something bigger. I do expect to see, obviously, a lot of Naughty Dog. Hopefully, I mean, could see Last of Us too. I would really enjoy that, but it seems a little soon on the docket.
Yeah. I'd be a little surprised if it wasn't leaked by now anyway. So
yeah, it's true.
Yeah, that's the other thing. So much of this stuff gets leaked now with so many people working on it. But and then in other E3 news, it's been leaked that there will be a new Xbox controller coming, and it's going to have a standard 3.5mm headphone jack built into it.
So to finally make people be able to use their own headphones on Xbox, which has been asking for since day one.
So right now you can, but you have to buy this $25 adapter. But
like all other stuff.
Yeah, but on the PS4 controller, it just has a regular headphone jack. Just plug in any headphones and it just works. So it's nice that they're going to bring that to the Xbox controllers without having to buy an adapter.
Is that headphone jack plus microphone?
Yeah.
Is it one jack? Okay, mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yes.
So that's really good for it.
So, and on the little adapter you can buy, like, it has volume controls and it has a mic mute button as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how you would change volume and whatnot on the controller itself without that adapter. I'm not sure how they do it on PS4, if they would, basically have you hold this button and press this to change volume or something like that.
Could just in-game volume tweak, maybe?
Maybe.
Just build some of the options.
Yeah.
Well, it's good that they're trying to correct some of the things that, on release finally.
Yeah, it seems like they've been doing a lot of that after they kind of fumbled the launch, by separating Kinect and everything and this. And so I wonder if this will lead to any bigger hardware changes with the console itself, or they're just going to have an updated controller.
I don't know. It definitely makes you think of what they could actually change hardware-wise to get. I mean, maybe less power draining. I mean, I know it loses a lot of power. So, yeah. I mean, I know that's one thing that's definitely been a concern, especially we talked about a few weeks ago that they were, pretty much, handed out papers by, the resource, National Resource Committee or whatever, saying they use too much power.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, isn't this just the way, I mean, it's the way consoles, the life of a console at this point, where, you look at the first version and it's huge, and then it slowly starts to dwindle as stuff gets cheaper and it's easier to make something smaller. And then eventually you get the really tiny one, and then you start back over again with a gigantic one that takes up too much power.
Yeah.
I just remember the first PS3.
Oh, yeah.
How big that thing was.
Oh, yeah. Even the first PS2 to the Slim, it's just, you know.
Yeah. I think the bigger thing would be is, if they did reduce the footprint of it, because it is big, even compared to the PS4, it is really big. Mm. So that would be nice if they, did some hardware tweaks just to kind of reduce its size and increase airflow.
Especially with a system that has, always on power mode.
But it was sort of built to be like a set top box though, right? Like it's supposed to be kind of like not necessarily flashy, but something that's always in your periphery, you don't have to hide it until you're going to play a game type of thing. For better or worse, I don't know if it really pulled that off, but
And that's why I'm kind of hoping for full DVR functionality later on, because then that would help justify it always being in that instant on mode, because it's like your cable box, it's always sitting there ready to record, so that justifies that. And if you can get rid of your cable box and use that instead, you're probably they make up for each other for a power draw.
It'd be interesting if they did a joint venture with one of the cable companies out there you know, and made the you know, Xbox 360 branded Verizon box.
Well, I think for a while on the 360, was it through Time Warner? It was through one of the cable companies. Like, instead of having a cable box from them, you could use your 360.
Interesting.
So, but it was like really limited to like only like one region or one provider or something like that. Right. But I know there was someone doing that. So it'd be kind of nice to see if more companies did that, because I don't see any reason why they can't.
Right.
So, with that, we'll move on to some screen-to-screen news. So, screen-to-screen news this week. We have a lot of television news. We'll get to that shortly with the upcoming summer. You know, it used to be that when, you know, summer comes, you don't watch TV anymore. Now it seems like they're trying to get TV back into summer. But we'll start first with 4K movie downloads are coming. So,
Vidity, which is kind of a terrible name. But yeah, so this is going to be kind of the first 4K movie download service coming later this year. And actually, there's a lot of people involved with this. So this is the doing of the Secure Content Storage Association. Also a terrible name.
That is a terrible name.
Yeah. But it's a... So this has Fox and Warner Brothers on board, as well as storage manufacturers, Western Digital and SanDisk. And they've been creating a system where users can download movies in the highest possible quality format of 4K, Ultra HD, and also using HDR. Vudu, Kaleidoscope, LG, Universal, Comcast, and Sprint are also on board.
So they actually have a lot of people on board. Mm.
Yeah, so it's like, it's a pretty good grouping of companies that are backing this, which is kind of the key with anything like this. Like, it needs to be either all or nothing, because or else it'll just fail.
Right.
And kind of the interesting, almost strange thing about this is the whole idea is that you'd be able to transfer. So you're going to download these 4K movies. They're going to be massive files, because they're talking, you know, up to 100 gigs, basically.
Right.
And you'd be able to transfer them between Western Digital and SanDisk devices without having to have them recheck in and authenticate online. So, which is an interesting idea, but I don't know how much of a problem that would be now. In order to have the bandwidth to download a 4K movie, you're going to have a really good internet connection.
Right.
So, but I guess it's like, okay, you could transfer a movie from an external hard drive to a giant thumb drive and take it with you and play it somewhere on a device that can play these files. Is the whole idea, but I don't know how actually useful that is.
Yeah, I don't see who the target market for this is. Like, I'm not downloading movies as it is now. Like, even the highest quality movies I get, I'm not downloading them now. I'm watching them on Netflix, or I own the Blu-ray, or I usually don't rent the Blu-ray, but I own the Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. It seems odd, especially going with 4K. Like, yes, 4K is great. 4K is going to be the standard in a couple of years maybe, but it's eventually going to be the standard downloading movies, maybe it's because they're concerned about the pipe otherwise. Like, streaming Netflix in 4K is probably pretty scary to the...
You're going to need a lot of bandwidth.
Right, to the ISPs, yeah. Well, it's the same idea.
Yeah, because I believe... Because Netflix does have limited 4K streaming now, and you need sustained 25 megabit,
right,
which almost no one has.
Yeah, and they're probably ratcheting, you know, even if you do have it for a couple seconds, it's probably being ratcheted once your ISP understands that you're like, oh, you're watching Netflix and you want to do it at a high resolution. Sorry. You're going to go back to SD, where you belong.
So I guess, like, the nice thing is with this, it's like, all right, you buy it, it can download over time, and then eventually you can watch it. But it's weird. So, okay, so this is yet another movie service you have to sign up for if you do want to watch, you know, something in 4K. I don't see why they don't partner with, because Vudu, a lot of the stuff when you buy a movie, it comes with a digital copy. It's usually through Vudu. So I don't know why they don't partner with them. Because Vudu right now, you can download SD copy, HD, and then they have like HDX, which is their like full 1080p copy.
Right.
I don't know why they don't partner with them. And then you have a step beyond that's 4K. And then just use that same service.
Or just fold it back into what you're already doing when you buy a physical copy.
Exactly. As opposed to like, okay, well, I have this movie here, but if I want to have a 4K copy of this movie, I have to buy it from this other service that's only going to work on these limited devices, and I have to download it to this thing. And it's just kind of like, it just seems like a mess.
And with physical copies,
onto your butts.
Ultra HD Blu-rays are coming as well this year.
Yeah.
In general, you're going with that, and now they're also doing the actual hard copies of like a 4K, you know, Ultra HD version. So,
right. I mean, in a way, I think that ends up making the most sense, because it, you know, it's sort of a back and forth between is the storage bigger, is your storage space bigger, or like should you just have a digital copy? And usually I think they kind of flip-flop back and forth, but I would rather just have a digital copy and not to worry about the storage constraints of owning a 4K downloaded copy.
Yeah, and it's like for myself, it's like I prefer having a physical copy because it's like, okay, I take the disc, I take it with me anywhere, I can play in any player.
Right.
And so I think this could be, actually 4K could be a really good case for Blu-rays or in this Ultra HD Blu-rays.
You know,
because
the
files are so big, it take forever to download. It's like, all right, you just have this one disc, it's the best quality you can get.
Right.
I'm a little sick of hearing about Ultra HD Blu-rays. I just finally converted my whole library to Blu-rays, all right?
And now it's time to convert again.
I'm not even there. I got to mix and match of both. You know?
Yeah, like, it's just, yeah. And now you can have a third option. It's just...
Yeah.
But at least the thing is they're saying Ultra Blu-ray, HD Blu-ray players will play regular Blu-rays. So at least they're backwards compatible.
Right.
So there's that at least.
I think Sean's... difficulty is they're not forward compatible.
Yes, forward compatible.
His new player is upgrade. Not going to play the Ultra HDs.
Upgrade my, right. my Blu-rays.
Yeah, but like in this case, it's like I'd much rather have just a 4K Blu-ray rather than downloading this 100 gig file and basically needing a giant hard drive just to be able to hold like 10 movies.
Right.
No, that's and then true.
Trying to play them through some sort of special player or software or whatnot. I mean, they're partnering with some TV, so I assume... presumably some smart TVs you just be able to plug in your hard drive and play it, but still.
Right.
So, we're coming to summer TV.
Yeah, I see. There's a long list here.
Yeah.
That I can see.
Really surprised.
These are all, and we're going to be talking about new shows that have never aired before. These are all premieres. These aren't continuations of other shows like Falling Skies, True Detective, stuff that also are going to be on this summer.
Right.
These are the new shows. So we'll start off with Netflix originals. And the first one is one I actually checked out the pilot already, Between. And if you guys don't know this one's about a bunch of adults on Pretty Lake who start dying. And anybody under the age of 22 ends up surviving, but everybody over 22 ends up dying. And the whole town is quarantined off and they're all trapped inside this town. And I guess what's different about this one is with Netflix, it's going to be put out weekly instead of all at once. So that's much different for like a Netflix style thing. I guess what happened is that you're teaming up with Canada City.
Right.
And they are releasing it 1 week at a time so that it will be airing the same day as it is in Canada.
Interesting.
Yeah, so this is new for the U.S. audience, but it's not new for people who have Netflix in Europe and other parts of the world. Because actually, Better Call Saul was a partnership between AMC and Netflix. So in other parts of the world, Netflix was releasing Better Call Saul weekly, and then AMC had the broadcast rights to it here in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess with this one is it definitely like it. Basically, it's going to air Thursday nights. It started May 21st. It's going to air Thursday nights at 8 o'clock on City, and then 11:30 p.m. in the U.S. Eastern Standard Time, it'll be released on Netflix. Hmm. So it's definitely a couple hours difference, but it seems like it's definitely like right away, right after it airs in Canada.
Right. Well, it's funny. That's East Coast, West Coast in America too. Like, yeah. You know, East Coast gets Game of Thrones, and then West Coast gets it a couple hours later.
It's basically the same thing kind of thing. And pretty much, it seems like feeling I got the show when I first saw the description and started reading it, I didn't think it'd be good. I actually was impressed with the pilot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys watched the trailer for it.
I saw the trailer. I was not very impressed by it at all.
Yeah, see, I watched the trailer as well, and I wasn't very impressed. I did watch the full episode, though, and it was a lot better than I thought it would be, actually, to be honest. I will watch the second episode. I think, actually, yeah, it's tonight. It goes up tonight. So I'll probably watch it tomorrow.
Nice.
But, so the next one on Netflix,
another touch on that. It's like, this kind of makes me more excited, though, for, like, future, more expanded, more interesting content, just because this is kind of a win for Netflix and whoever they're making it with, because basically in the case of AMC, like, okay, Netflix has a worldwide distribution network they can reach out to, put that out to, and then they can help finance this thing with AMC. So AMC gets a win because they have someone else helping to finance the show, and Netflix gets a win because they get distribution and another show to add to their repertoire throughout the rest of the world.
Right, which increases their, you know, people, their buying power, their staying power, because everyone wants to subscribe because it's going to be more and more shows.
Yeah, so I kind of hope we get some more interesting shows that, you know, maybe are more localized to Europe or Australia or something like that as partnerships, and we get that content brought here.
The only losers are the cable companies.
Exactly. Well, in this case, not for AMC, because they still get to broadcast it throughout the U.S., and Netflix is writing them a check.
Right. That's true. So the next Netflix original is Sense8, which has gotten actually a lot of press, more press than any of the other Netflix originals so far, that are new ones that are coming this summer. This is going to be one June 8th. All episodes go up online. It's created and written and executive produced by the Matrix trilogy creators, Andy and Lana Wachowski. And basically, it's about these eight people, and they all share like the same senses and same like...
Yeah, it can draw on the skills that someone else has. So if someone knows how to pick a lock, the other one can pick the lock because of that, the skill knowledge that the other person has. I saw the trailer. This actually looks really interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it's been getting a lot of good buzz.
Yeah, so if between the cutting of the two trailers, I would say this one was built up to be more interesting of the two shows.
Definitely seems like this is like their big hit for like Netflix originals for the summer. They put a lot more into one show than anything for the summer, and this was the one they actually went for.
Well, so with these two shows having very different distribution methods in a way, which do you think is more successful in terms of, or which do you enjoy watching more, the fact that Sense8 is going to come out all at once or that Between is coming out weekly? Do you have an opinion on which is which? Or
I think if I was going to get into Between, I'd probably just wait until it all aired.
Right.
You know, it's like, all right, I'll watch something else on Netflix. In the meantime, I have enough stuff in my queue. And then when all the episodes are out, then I can watch it. If I like it, then I can just binge on it.
Yeah.
I have to agree with Tristan. It was a little weird watching the pilot and then having to stop on Netflix.
That's how normal shows are, Sean.
I know. I felt like, I was like, what is this? What is this?
Right.
I'm not a regular person.
Mad Men's writer or creator, Matt Weiner, had a thing about how he wouldn't know if he would ever write something for Netflix because he doesn't like the fact that – because you don't have that week to digest it or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the same time, he complains about how he's written a show that has this overarching thing that happens over a whole season. And it's true of like Breaking Bad is one type of show where every season kind of ends not necessarily on a cliffhanger but on a way that you want to watch the next one. Like you're ready – you like take that week to watch the next one. Where other shows just work so well of just like binging through the whole thing. I don't know if Game of Thrones will work in a binge fashion. It's heavy show. A lot of stuff happens, but other episodes nothing happens. So maybe you want to watch two at a time.
I was about to bring up Game of Thrones because I do like watching that weekly just because there's so much going on. There's so many different storylines. You do kind of get to absorb it. I mean, kind of the thing more for me I like about a Netflix-made show is that, okay, we don't have to factor in. We have to have five stopping points to have commercial breaks throughout the show.
Right.
So, like, that's more of the thing I like about Netflix, a show produced for Netflix versus for regular production television. Yes. But HBO doesn't have to worry about that.
And that is one thing I saw with Between was it did have those kind of commercial breaks.
Fade to black.
Yeah,
because it knew it was airing on City.
Right.
So you was getting ready for a commercial. But on Netflix, obviously, it didn't need that.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say maybe our collective conscience is different on those types of shows. Like, if you think about Game of Thrones, and if Game of Thrones had been a Netflix show, just think about like all the stuff that happened last season, those big moments that everyone was talking about, during the week. Everyone would be watching them at different times. They wouldn't be experiencing them at the same time, so you don't get that kind of fun water cooler talk that comes with it in discussing the show. Like Lost is another example of that.
Yeah, that is true. That is like one of the bigger reasons for the show and like why it's so popular is that so many people watch it and it gets such discussion during a week.
Right.
Yeah, like it is nice to like – you can catch up with someone like, okay, I watched it on Sunday. I'm talking to someone on Friday. They're at the same point in the show with me as opposed to like with you at Daredevil, you finished it all in one weekend.
Right.
I did,
it's like, all right, I've watched two episodes, so we can't really discuss it without getting spoiled.
You're not asking, have you seen this show? You're asking, have you seen this week's episode?
Yeah.
You know, two different mentalities on all that stuff.
It definitely makes it easier to talk about. I will agree with that.
Yeah, so I think certain shows, like they definitely do benefit from a weekly release schedule.
So next we have a sci-fi original show, which is Dark Matters, which is a space mystery, which is an intriguing mix.
sci-fi.
Basically, these people wake up on a ship, and they don't know how they got there, where they are, how to do anything, what's going on whatsoever. And basically, throughout the show, they're going to reveal stuff and how what happened. This is actually based on a comic book of the same name, but I guess it was pitched as a TV show. They didn't like it, so they made it into a comic, but now it's back to being a TV show because of the comic success. So, I mean, it seems intriguing more the mystery part because you don't get a lot of mystery shows nowadays, and I kind of miss that. In space. Well, you don't get any mystery shows in space, let's be honest. But at the same time, it definitely has that Sci-Fi Channel feel.
Yeah. In terms of, like, it had zero budget. And it's obvious that this was, like, the whole set was built in a warehouse somewhere, and they never deviate from the set.
Yeah, and that's maybe why they're doing the show is because it all takes place on a spaceship
yeah.
in the same area at the same time.
So you're saying we only have to build one set for the entire run of the show right. and sold. Yes,
and probably don't even have to change the lighting. We just leave it. I thought the preview was pretty good, but you have to check out the trailer to kind of see what the mystery is. I'm always afraid of shows that are built on a mystery like that, though, because it's like once you solve the mystery, the show's not – it's like Twin Peaks. Like the show's not interesting once that is gone, unless you can build on top of it some other thing. But
we'll see when Twin Peaks comes back.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, but I am intrigued by this. The first one I heard the premise, I'm like, all right, but the trailer makes it look decent. So we'll have to wait and see for the pilot if it is any good. But
yeah, it's definitely – the only thing holding it back, obviously, is the sci-fi name.
Right.
Yeah. Which they've done good quality stuff in the past, but not in recent
memory.
Well,
if they have sharks, it's okay.
I mean, Eureka was a fantastic show, and that was sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah. Which is weird to think about. But.
Yeah. As well as Battlestar Galactica.
Was Warehouse 13 theirs as well?
Yes, it was.
Which is also pretty decent.
Yeah, so. It was a crossover. They did a lot of crossovers with Eureka, actually, if I remember right.
Right.
The next we have is HBO, The Brink, which has actually gotten a lot of press recently. It stars Jack Black and Tim Robbins. Mm. And basically, it's a political movie, which is a little strange.
Well, political comedy.
Political comedy. which definitely makes it. But I guess the intriguing thing is the pilot episode was actually written by the writer of Weeds, and I guess the director is Jay Roach, who did Austin Powers and Meet the Parents.
Bizarre.
Yeah, it's just a weird mix-up of talent, both on the directing side and the acting side. But actually, I'm looking forward to it. It looks pretty good, and it looks like kind of Jack Black in, like, his element.
Right. The trailer that I saw, though, made it kind of look like it could be a decent 2-hour movie. It was like it felt like the interview almost. They're just like, oh, this is interesting, but I imagine it only goes on for 2 hours and then it's done. So I'm interested to see kind of this on an arc of actual episodes.
Yeah, and I didn't notice. Like, I'm assuming this is only like a half hour comedy. Or I don't know if it's an hour long show or.
Well, supposedly at 10:30 on June 21st is the first episode, so I imagine
so probably
it's
a half hour.
Yeah.
So I think like in a half hour bit format, like this could work really well.
Right, I'm very curious to see what comes out of it.
Yeah. And so again, though, I didn't mention for Dark Matters, that's Friday, June 12th at 10 p.m. That'll start up. Next is the King of Summer, apparently. I'm going to call them the Kings of Summer, which is AMC. They have a lot of new summer shows, plus all their other summer shows they already have going on. The first one is AMC's Humans, which is basically, I guess this show was originally a partnership with Microsoft Entertainment, like their studios they had over there before they shut them down. And I guess it was with them and Channel 4, but then AMC stepped in. So now they're working with Channel 4 for this. And it stars Catherine Parkson, who from the IT Crowd. So this is an interesting plot here, which is basically it's humanoid robots, and they're like very realistic. And they haven't done much to reveal the whole plot of it, but it seems like, to me, it seems like they're getting more and more aware. That's what I took away from the trailer. I don't know if you guys thought different, but
it was like a Skynet type thing going on.
Yeah, it definitely did.
It looks interesting. We'll see if they can pull it off, but it's almost kind of like a mix of a couple different genres that have come before, almost like a surrogates type of a thing, but also like, you're a robot that's supposed to help and be almost like the iRobot type of a thing, but very humanoid looking. And kind of weird how this started off as a partnership with Microsoft Studios, which they then shut down and was taken over by AMC.
Well, it's good they had a second chance, obviously, with AMC, even though Microsoft shut down. But it seems intriguing a lot more than some of the other shows that we've already talked about recently.
Yeah, and it's also something new and different, which makes me more interested in it rather than kind of rehashing a topic they've already done.
Mm-hmm. A million times. the next one for AMC is one that I think a lot of people are looking forward to, but it's so looking forward to. They haven't even gave us a date yet. They just said late summer, which is Fear the Walking Dead, which is set in L.A., and it's the start of the zombie apocalypse, and it's a prequel to the current Walking Dead series.
This is kind of what I was referring to.
Yeah.
But I'm actually intrigued by this. Basically, it's being created by Robert Kirkman, who wrote the comics and is working on the TV show. And he actually created all the characters as well during his time working on the last few seasons of Walking Dead. So it definitely makes me intrigued to see how it all started, especially reading the comics for so long. And the comics start where the original Walking Dead show starts. So it'd be interesting to see how this all started too, in general, from the mind of the person who actually wrote the comics.
Right.
Yeah. So the fact that he's writing and creating it makes me more hopeful. But like when I first heard it, it's like, oh great, another spinoff show.
Right.
Just kind of like, but actually this looks like it might be interesting to see how, I wonder if they would do like some little bit characters that show up later in The Walking Dead, if they would show up here first.
I think it would be interesting to see if he can put a different, kind of a different spin on it in a way. I know it's in a different place, but it ends up being, you know, the similar, the tropes of a zombie TV show or movie are the same, you know, from show to show. I think The Walking Dead, it's a lot more of what's going to happen to these characters, not like anything that's special about this zombie apocalypse versus any other zombie apocalypse.
And that's what made The Walking Dead interesting, is like the zombie apocalypse happened and this guy wakes up in the middle of it. It's like, oh, okay, we see it slowly happen like we do in every other zombie show or film.
Let's see, 20 Days Later might be the one other exception.
That's true. Where also he does, waking like, up in a hospital bed.
Right, it wakes up, wakes up like, oh, crap. So, yeah, I'd be curious to see what the timing is of the first season. It'd be interesting to see if it's in real time, where it's like, you know, it never stops for these characters, and instead of it just being like, you know, the first episode is when it starts, and then the second episode jumps 4 months ahead, and now you're out of that issue, and now you're basically doing The Walking Dead 2, LA edition or whatever.
Well, I'm trying to remember for The Walking Dead, how long ago did the epidemic start when the comics started?
When the comic started, he had woken up just recently, like after it happened. I want to say it was like a month or so, maybe after like the whole thing happened.
Yeah, because he couldn't have survived that long, you know, without nourishment and everything, sitting in a hospital bed. So I wonder how much sooner to the virus outbreaking is the show going to take place? Like, I wonder if the season finale of the first season would be like the virus starting to emerge and like the whole season is building up to what led to the outbreak, or if it'll start with the first zombie showing up, in which case you wouldn't be that much ahead of the timeline of The Walking Dead.
The teaser seemed to imply that it was basically like it was as it was happening. Like, we kind of see the first drops in the bucket that make this things go crazy, basically.
Yeah, like the whole, I think the teaser only available right now is basically like a radio broadcast saying like somebody, like, you know, it's a sickness or something. Like, it's very like low key teaser. And the fact that this is coming out this summer and they haven't given us a release date yet is a little weird as it is, but it's AMC, I think, playing a little hard to get, being they know it's popular. I mean, they've already greenlit it for 2 seasons.
It's just a cash cow for them.
I wonder if it'll be full-length seasons or if they'll be kind of shortened season, if they'll only do like a 10-episode thing for it.
I mean, AMC usually does the 12s, right?
Yeah, they the 12. Really do.
Or Walking Dead is usually like 16.
Walking Dead is well, that's right. Once again, that's the cash cow.
Oh, yeah. we can just make a couple more episodes and just make boatloads of money. According to Wikipedia, it's a months-long coma that he was in, that he wakes up from.
So it's a month, yeah. So it's a month. So it's not too long.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everything went to hell in that month.
Yeah, so I wonder if the majority of the season would take place in that 1 month, and then after the first season, you'd be caught up to the beginning of The Walking Dead.
Well, I think it would keep going. Obviously, it's going to be 2 seasons, so I think it's going to take – because obviously, like you said, this is in L.A., so, like, this is, like, all the way across the other end, so you're seeing what's happening over there. Hmm. You know, wouldn't it be a kick in the ass if it's just all pleasant over there? It's just a pleasant show. And like, you know, it's just showing
there
that
is
Rick...
no zombie
outbreak. It's basically suburbia, and that's what they're fighting over.
And it's just, it's showing that Rick has, like, the bad end of the stick over there. All right, so we're moving on to another AMC, which I'm actually intrigued by this. It's Making the Mob, which is a docudrama narrated by Ray Liotta, obviously, because we have to give him a paycheck somehow, from Goodfellas, following the history of the mob starting in 1905 and spanning over 50 years. It's going to be an 8-part series.
Interesting.
So, yeah, this one seems interesting based on the fact that it's a docudrama. And what the trailers I saw of it actually looks pretty intriguing. There was no narration yet to be seen in the trailers whatsoever, but they're definitely going heavy on the docudrama, the drama part of the documentary.
Right.
That's Monday, June 15th at 10.
I think I saw one of the teasers when I was watching AMC. I think it was probably during the Mad Men finale.
Yeah.
And I definitely like popped up from what I was doing. I was like, oh, this looks interesting. So I'd be curious to see what they do with it. And be curious to see if it leads to the MCU doing similar things for other things, similar types of things for other subjects. But
yeah, I don't know. It looks a little interesting, but it almost looks like stuff that I've seen before. Like I saw the trailer, and I was just like, this doesn't really interest me enough to pick up a new show and pull me away from all the other stuff I have going on. Like, it doesn't seem different enough from kind of these types of things that we've seen before.
Well, I think the intriguing part is it's an 8-part series. So, like, it's not going to continue off of these 8 parts. It's just an 8-part, like, mini-series, basically, right, that it's giving you. And that's enough to, like, you know, watch it and go. I mean, another one I watched, which was the History Channels, was kind of like this, was Sons of Liberty, which is very good.
Yep.
Sons of Liberty was very intriguing. History Channel has been doing a lot of those, like, just mini-series kind of shows, and they've been done very well.
Right, right.
So this is intriguing to see AMC take a stab at it and how they're going to do it. The next one is a little iffy. CBS's Zoo. It's based on the James Patterson book of the same name. And from the trailer, I mean,
It looks terrible.
This is Tristan's outlook on it, obviously. It looks terrible.
Are you going to tell me it looks good from the trailer?
I might give the first episode a try, but that's about it, maybe. We'll
Are you going to say it looks good?
I'm not going to say it looks good. Okay. I'm going to say it looks intriguing. It looks intriguing. Pretty much, I guess, wild animals are taking back the planet and killing humans, not like for sport, and murdering them. So it definitely seems worse. Scott, I know you probably watched the trailer. What did you think of this one?
I don't know. I'm surprised. I guess I'm surprised that this is a James Patterson thing, because that sounds very sci-fi based.
That's so strange that it's a CBS thing.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's the other thing that surprised me. Oh, CBS during the summer, so it's that's a weird
yeah.
That they're doing a narrative show during the summer, I think, is surprising, and not just like more seasons of Survivor.
Yeah.
So I was a little surprised, because it sounds like it's, you know, got that element, and that's not really what James Patterson's known for. So I guess if I'm picking a James Patterson thing to go after, this probably wouldn't be it. So,
and it's intriguing that this is the one they did go after and made. So
right.
So that brings us to Stars, which is one I'm actually kind of excited about after watching the trailer, which is Blunt Talk.
Mm-hmm. This looks
Patrick
good.
Stewart, yeah. And Seth MacFarlane.
This almost looks like it's a little takeoff of The Newsroom, because HBO had a lot of success with the 3 seasons they did that. Newsroom was a fantastic show, and this has a very similar feel to it. So the Stars was kind of like, okay, we can make something in that vein to kind of replace now that audience that is looking for a similar type of show now that Newsroom is done.
Yeah, it definitely seems like and it's weird seeing Patrick Stewart in more of a comedic element. Because like he's been doing it a lot on his own, like with Facebook and Twitter and
he's
stuff.
He's a funny guy, especially when he hangs out with
Ian McKellen.
McKellen, yeah. He's a funny dude, so it's cool that they did that. I will say, though, that it kind of bummed me out. He seems old in this show. Like, he seems like even when he's on camera, he's struggling just to, like, to survive the episodes. but he's funny. The show's funny. I mean, it's definitely got that Seth MacFarlane feel to it in a lot of ways. He's an EP, but it's totally him too.
I'm excited for this, because I mean, Newsroom wasn't as much of a comedy, so this is kind of doing that twist on it, and it just seems like such a strange role for Patrick Stewart. Like, you don't really see him do a lot of comedic work, and so I want to watch it just because there's Patrick Stewart in it,
right?
And I can never get enough of him.
Yeah, it's very true. So that ends for what we're, at least the new ones we know of or have talked about that we thought were intriguing for summer shows. I guarantee there's more. I mean, there's Mr. Robot, I think we saw a trailer for. There was there's a couple other ones coming out this summer as well, plus all the other shows.
Was Supergirl this summer or this fall?
That's this fall. We will get to Supergirl in a little bit. There's some news on that. If you were tired of not hearing more news on that, I don't know what to tell you. But now we have Independence Day 2. Yes, there's a sequel to Independence Day 2. And after nearly 20 years after the original film hit theaters, Mr. Jeff Goldblum is back for Independence Day.
It's not like he has much else going on.
Yeah, I know. He couldn't grab that Jurassic Park part, could he? Not again.
That's a bummer.
His book's in there, though, apparently. We'll see. Well, Scott will see before all of us.
Right.
But Scott got early screening tickets to Jurassic World.
Yeah, we'll see if I get a seat. I imagine it's probably pretty popular.
So basically, Jeff Goldblum took a, apparently the producer, Dean Devlin, shared on Instagram a selfie with him and Goldblum on the set of Independence Day 2. So to confirm that basically he is back, they started shooting, they're getting ready to do this. It's going to come out June 24th, 2016, so next summer. Hmm. So we will have another sequel next summer, not that you were surprised about that or didn't think there would be.
Right.
And Bill Pullman is also slated to return, obviously, but not as the president because we have a female president in this one.
Hmm. I wonder if it's his wife.
It probably is. And, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about Independence Day 2. It's been a long time. So I know they've always had the script for a long time since the first one ended.
Right.
But I don't know that's a movie that needs a sequel. It's like, all right, is planet Earth going to be invaded again? Is that basically going to be the premise of it?
Well, pretty much.
Yeah. aliens hold a grudge, you know?
It's true.
You can't just destroy the race and expect them not to come back.
I'm pretty sure that was the
writer
back.
And producer's actual
right.
pitch. Like, you know, why would they just leave?
Yeah. They're beaten back once by David Goldblum. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah, I don't see Randy Quaid coming back to help him this time.
I want to see Will Smith come back for this, though. Just bring them all back.
It's like a cameo.
Well, yeah.
Except for Randy Quaid. But
but it's just like, I don't know. Maybe once a trailer is available, we'll see. But I don't really have high hopes for this.
We'll see. Yeah. Maybe it'll be awesome.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe it won't.
So we got some new trailers. The first one is Point Break. Yes, there is a remake.
I have much to say about that.
Point Break being released on May. The trailer was released on May 26th. It's scheduled to come out Christmas Day 2015. Obviously, Point Break. You all know Keanu Reeves. You know
Patrick Swayze.
And what's weird in this trailer is that Keanu Reeves, the person playing the Keanu Reeves character in this, looks like has like the same hair as Patrick Swayze did in the original movie, and vice versa.
Right.
So like their roles, appearance wise, are switched.
Mm.
So I feel like we've been getting a lot of like reboots to slash sequels lately. I feel this is like the first time in a little while we've gotten like a straight out remake. So
I don't know. It seems like I don't even know how to describe it. Because I literally was just watching Port Break yesterday. I want to go back and check it out. And it seems like it's, I don't know, yeah, maybe it's like a remake for the 21st century, I guess, in a way. Like, oh, you know, surfing's not cool enough, but yeah. Jumping out of planes and snowboarding is cool enough.
I mean, there's been a big rise in extreme sports over the last 20 years since this was made, but it just seems... Also, the acting seems terrible. Like, as soon as they open their mouths in this movie.
I mean, it was Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze in the first one. I mean,
it was also the early 90s.
They're not swinging for the fences there.
No, it was a little bit more acceptable. It's just like, as soon as they started speaking this trailer, it's terrible.
I would actually say that something interesting is the directors of the two movies. But before that, the feeling of the first one, like the atmosphere, was very like this kind of noir feel to it. It was on the beach, but it was a lot of like late at night and kind of dark and stuff. And the soundtrack, which is apparently well regarded overall, was really, really good. So this new one just seemed like kind of like it's kind of gonna be like some really, you know, hard music and snowboarding and like that's what it's about. I'd rather watch the movie that's about surfing half the time and kind of working around that. But the director of the first one was Kathryn Bigelow, who did Zero Dark Thirty and also the other movie she's known for, which I can't think of off the top of my head. But, it's James Cameron's wife at some point who supposedly did a rewrite of the original Point Break. And the new one was the Fast and the Furious cinematographer of the original. He's a cinematographer, but he's also a director. But if you've ever watched the first Fast and Furious movie, it's basically Point Break. Like literally the plot is exactly the same.
I never thought about that. Yeah, but
the guy's
an
undercover cop. he gets in
has
with
to
this
blend like, in with them.
Right, exactly. Eventually gets found out, you know, lets the guy go, you know. Not the spoiler, but I mean, it's a 25-year-old movie or 20-year-old movie, I think it.
You're a little behind the times.
Yeah,
people.
Exactly.
We spoiled for you.
Right.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I just spoiled Point Break 2 for you.
Yeah. Well, I never thought about Fast and Furious that way, but
yeah, it's
it
almost
really
exactly like timing and everything. It's almost exactly the same movie. I'm surprised there isn't like any lawsuits or anything that happened over that. But.
But it involves cars instead of surfing, so it's completely different.
Right, yes.
So technically, since this one is skydiving and not surfing, is this not Point Break?
It's weird because, like, you know, their whole main thing is they were surfers, but in this it's like, all right, they show them on motocross bikes, they show them snowboarding, they show them skydiving, show them doing, like, everything.
Maybe they're just extreme sport people.
Right. Yeah, and the motivation seemed a little different, too, for what they were doing. I think there's, like, one shot of them actually surfing in the whole trailer, so.
Yeah.
So, who knows, man.
I don't know.
How do I feel about that?
The release date is a little perplexing here, too, to be honest with you. They're pretty much going against Star Wars.
Well, Star Wars doesn't come out Christmas Day, though, does it? Doesn't it come out a couple weeks before that?
A week or so.
Right.
You're giving yourself a week leeway with one of the most, you know, excitable movies for the whole year.
Yeah.
In some ways, it might be a counter-programming thing where you have, like, maybe an older crowd that doesn't really want to see Star Wars, that isn't into sci-fi, might go for this more action-based comedy, like, oh, it's Point Break. You know, Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves. I'm going to go back and see that. You know, you think you're targeting maybe some people.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing I wonder, too. Like, is this targeting the nostalgia audience who watched that when they were younger and really liked it?
Or is it sorely disappointed.
Yeah, or is it going after a new generation who is not familiar with the original Point Break at all? Or maybe they've heard the name, so they're familiar with the name. They'll see that, like, oh, I've heard of that. I've heard that that's good. I'll check out the new one.
Yeah.
Wasn't that in Hot Fuzz? Yeah. So we have another trailer also.
American Ultra, which looks really interesting. The Red Band trailer just released today.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like a stoner action movie starring Christian Stewart and Jesse Eisenberg.
I'm surprised this is coming out in August.
Yeah, that's true. It comes out August 21st, and we're seeing just the first trailer today.
Yeah.
So not a lot of lead time.
I mean, maybe they didn't have high hopes for it or something. I don't know, but
which is surprising because I actually think it's going to be a fun movie in some ways. I think the casting is actually pretty rock solid.
They both make really good stoners.
Yeah, I think go and check the Red Band trailer. I think it's pretty solid. But the premise is that Jesse Eisenberg is a sleeper cell and he gets activated, but he doesn't realize that he's a sleeper cell, and so he's just like killing people and doesn't realize why or like that he can. It's sort of like a. Like the first, like, whatever, 30 minutes of Bourne, the first Bourne movie.
Yeah, where he has like, all these abilities but doesn't know.
It's like, I don't know why this. I know this, but I know that the best place to find a gun is the, you know, glove box of that truck out there. Like, it's basically that. He's like, I don't know how I'm killing these people, but I am.
So basically take Jason Bourne and make him high.
Right, and make him the creator of Facebook.
Well, and, like, they have a – it's movie seems like it is going to be quite ridiculous in the entertaining ways. There's one of the scenes of the trailer is he throws up a frying pan and shoots a gun and bounces the bullet off of the frying pan to hit a guy in a doorway. So it's kind of like
– It's if you like Pineapple Express, I would say you'd probably like this.
Yeah.
Put that in the same vein as that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it seems like it would be an entertaining, good summer action flick.
Right, yes, I think it's a very good –
And it's also something a little bit different. It's not another sequel.
Right. Thank Christ.
Yeah, and it's towards the end of the summer, so it's definitely something, you know, you'd right at the end of the summer, right before you go back, something to see that with not much competition in August this year, so.
Yeah. Also, it seems Jesse Eisenberg seems to be popping up in a lot of films lately,
but I
don't think Kristen Stewart has been done much notable since the Twilight series.
She's done a decent amount of kind of like indie stuff.
Okay.
I think it's kind of more where she's hanging out these days.
She plays a stoner well, I'll be honest.
Right.
I mean, she has the face for
that very blank face is perfect for.
So after trailers, we talked about this last week, which was the pilot for Supergirl. And, or was it actually, it was two weeks ago.
They released a 6.5-minute trailer a week or two ago.
Yeah, it was, because Joey was on and we talked about that with him. So apparently the pilot episode was leaked online. So the first episode of Supergirl was leaked online. It's basically 6 months before it's scheduled to air, which is a little crazy. A lot of people, though, are thinking that it had no watermarks, no warnings or whatsoever. But some people are speculating that CBS did this on purpose.
I mean, it's a good way to gauge reaction.
Yeah.
And also to build up hype for it.
They want to generate positive buzz, I guess, because they had heard, like we had talked about, the trailer wasn't that great and it wasn't getting a lot of good buzz.
Well, I guess I've heard mixed things. I think it was too long, and I think a lot of people thought it was too long, especially because it definitely like, oh, we know the premise of the entire first season now.
Yeah.
And I know you guys didn't like it, but a lot of the Twitter stuff I was getting, especially from people that I know in LA, were kind of refreshed at her. A couple of the different things that happened, like her outfit kind of being a little bit more modern and not like a kind of a slutty thing she had going on. I thought they responded to that really well and kind of her.
Plus, what I liked is it was brightly colored too, because like one of the things I didn't like about the Man of Steel movie is like it's so darkly muted and colored. Like they tried to make it like the Dark Knight series, but this year it's like all bright colors and everything, her costume especially.
Yeah, so I'm interested to. I wouldn't be surprised if they were doing that as a in that way. It also could just be somebody got a copy of it and was able to, you know, release it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, if it was them, it's good on them, because so far, I guess early responses have been more positive than for the trailer. They've actually got more positive reviews from the leak than mixed reviews they got from the trailer. So,
well, I'm curious to watch it now just because of the good things I have been hearing about the first episode. But yeah, I don't know if it's just the way the 6.5 minute trailer was cut together and paced, but it just kind of made it look kind of klutzy and was not a fan of it, and just kind of ditzy.
It was a mix between the SNL Black Widow trailer and Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
And hopefully that is not how it is, and the episode is getting good buzz based on the fact that the trailer was complete garbage. So,
yeah, because it is notable in a couple ways. It is the first kind of superhero show for CBS and kind of the first, I believe, female superhero-focused series we've seen on TV.
I would call Agent Carter as one, too, though, to honest. And I feel Agent Carter was done really well, too.
Yeah, Agent Carter was fantastic. But, yeah, if we're going to go for, like, you know, superhero,
superpowers, you'd have to go with.
So I think Agent Carter you could call, like, the first kind of, like, Marvel-focused or comic-focused female lead. But this is the first, like, kind of actual female superhero we've seen.
Right. Now on to a superhero team that doesn't need a reboot. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Mm. Fox announced they're doing reboot plans for the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Mm. So 20th Century Fox has announced plans to attempt another adaptation of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen under iRobot and Predator producer John Davis, because apparently the studio didn't learn its lesson the first time.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that they were going to try to do a TV show as a reboot of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but now they're going back to doing a film instead.
Yeah, it's a little, obviously, you know, you're bringing back a movie that basically killed Sean Connery's career.
It's sad on multiple levels. I think it could actually work as a TV show with the right people involved. If you had a kind of grittier, kind of daredevil-y thing going on, but also had someone who's kind of can respect the steampunk genre, I think it could work really well. Unfortunately, you're never going to get Alan Moore to be involved, which is kind of the bummer of the whole thing. So doing the movie again, it's just kind of like, oh god, here we go, and like it's not going to be that good. You know, I just don't think it can work. But
I feel like if they did a origin like story for like these characters, like the Marvel Universe did, even a TV show format, like you don't have to go all based on the comics, because obviously these characters all have books based on themselves. Mm-hmm. If you did something like that to lead up to a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I think maybe you'd have a little better luck.
Possibly.
But, well, I mean, the way it is now with just throwing them all in with, like, a half-assed way of doing it with basically a producer and you already know failed how many times. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a good play.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I want to be excited for this because I'm a big fan of the steampunk genre. Also, it'd be something different. It's like, okay, it's not another city-smashing modern-day superhero movie, which we're just getting tons and tons and tons of coming up.
Right.
It's like, all right, it's a different time period, some different characters, so you can do some more fun things with it, especially if you go steampunky with it. But
yeah, like I'd like to see HBO do this. I'd like to see HBO do it and see what they could come out and get, like that kind of gritty, muted color look to it, mm-hmm. And do that kind of steampunk thing. But it's going to end up being way too flashy and way too actiony instead of being kind of what the books are, which isn't really actiony, I guess.
Yeah, it's like I feel like you could do a high quality version of this, but I don't think that's the direction Fox is going to take it in, unfortunately.
No, definitely not.
What's interesting here is also I noticed that it's Fox that's doing it when Warner Brothers holds most of DC's properties. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that Fox is the one who has this property to do it in general.
Hmm.
I'm wondering if this was something later on. Did Fox bring out the first League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? Or was it a different studio?
I don't even remember.
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure. I feel like it was Fox.
Yeah, so it's definitely interesting. I know there was the whole thing with, like, this comic had changed hands a lot based on, like, who owned it. And obviously the whole Alan Moore thing in general is kind of a little weird, but...
Well, he just doesn't – he just won't be involved in any of the things.
Yeah, but – and he doesn't have control to stop it anymore, so it's just
– Right.
It's a little sad on that part, especially when you have the creator of the content itself, you know, not being able to put his own say in or do anything with it or, you know, stop it in general. It's,
or put his kind of – his touch on it.
Yeah.
Production company was 20th Century Fox.
Okay. So it was Fox,
yeah.
That's interesting. So yeah. – Which leads us back to another Fox movie, which actually I'm excited about, which I was surprised to find out was a February release, to be honest with you, which is Deadpool. Everything I've seen for Deadpool so far makes me think it's going to be epically amazing.
even the February release?
Even the February release. I don't know why it's getting a February release, but everything I've seen at least, I'm thinking it's a February release based on the fact it's a rated R Marvel film.
Right. That might be it.
Well, and also it kind of gets them out in front of all like the spring and summer kind of Marvel action flicks. You don't usually get a lot of action flicks in February, and also it's post Star Wars.
Right. I mean maybe we're past that whole idea of like obviously you need your summer blockbusters, but it seems like the first blockbuster keeps moving back towards January to the point where like that first one hits in May now. So maybe February isn't that far off of that, and that's the way things are going. But I think it's going to be great too. I'm looking forward to a R-rated superhero film.
Yeah. Well, it's also kind of funny that they're bringing that out right near 2 days before Valentine's Day.
Yeah,
it's like great. So I guess it could be the anti Valentine's Day film. It's like, all right, you're going to have probably a bunch of romantic comedies and stuff out now, and here's something for everyone else who doesn't want to see that.
Are you kidding me? That's going to be awesome. What girl? I don't want to date a girl who doesn't want to go to Deadpool for Valentine's Day. Maybe that's why I'm single. All right, let's go. Basically, the news with Deadpool is that basically he had a conversation. He was asked, would your old mate Wolverine, a.k.a. Hugh Jackman, going to pop up in Deadpool? And his response was, God, I hope so. That would be really nice. I don't know. We'll see. It seems like he's open to it, but it's going to be more of a scheduling issue than anything else. So it seems like they have plans for it, definitely. Like, the way he's talking, it seems like they definitely have plans for a Wolverine cameo in Deadpool.
I mean, that'd be really exciting if he did pop up in some sort of way.
He's like just, like, driving a taxi or something.
Yeah. Or, like, even in X-Men First Class, the Wolverine cameo in that was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it was great. With the whole, you know...
Just walk into the bar.
And then the fuck off.
It's like, okay. So, like, even if it was just something little like that, that would be great. So, but hopefully it'll be a little bit bigger of a role than that.
Definitely. Which brings us to Game of Thrones for this week. Episode 7. It's almost over. Season 5, guys.
3 episodes left.
Over. 3 left.
Feels like not a lot has happened this season. It's been mostly kind of building towards stuff.
I will be honest, but I felt like this episode and this episode this week was one of the best we've had this season so far.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, it definitely was.
They had some notable things happen, which we will get to them all.
Yes. So first off, we have over at Castle Black. Obviously, we don't have to tell you guys again. Obviously, we will, though. Spoilers. Extra spoilers. We start at Castle Black, which we had our first character death of natural causes.
Which is kind of unreal that it's taken through most of the way through season 5 for us to have a character with a natural death.
Well, I feel like nobody makes it that far.
I think that's the point. Like, he was lucky. Like,
he's a lucky one.
And the character we're talking about, obviously, is Maester Aemon. So he died of natural causes. And obviously Sam was there in Gilly. And, you know, looking after him, and he died. And I think one of the more intriguing things is here that he was when Sam's over there watching and he's told that he's losing all his friends. And, like, you definitely see – and in the next scene when he's beat up, you're definitely seeing, like, that Sam's kind of alone, especially in the other scene where John left Castle Black to meet with the Free Folk to try to get them, you know.
Yeah, to come south of the wall.
To help him with the all them, so –
So, yeah, Sam very much is all alone. And in that scene, actually, it was Ghost who came to his rescue. And it's been quite a while since we've seen any of the direwolves in an episode.
Yeah, it's true, actually. I think Ghost is, like, the only one left. But
let's see. We have Ghost. Arya's ran off. Bran and his younger brother both have theirs.
Well, they're not in this season so far whatsoever.
Yeah, so there's at least 4 or 5 still around.
So, and then the big part, obviously, we're still in the north, which was Sansa, where she asks Reek, Theon, to light a candle in the tower to get help because Theon, you know, she sees him as Theon. She keeps calling him Theon after, you know, the big controversy last week, obviously, of the whole Ramsay-Sansa rape. Basically, you know, she sees Theon. She's at the point now where she's getting so hurt and she's just locked up every night, it seems like, that he's just, like, coming at her and, like, you know, Ramsay is definitely getting a lot of votes for either even more cruel than Joffrey at this point.
Yeah, he's definitely replaced Joffrey as the most hated character, and everyone's waiting for him to die.
So basically she asks Theon to light the candle, basically, in the tower to send for help. And instead, Theon, being the whipped little dog he is, takes it to Ramsay. And then Ramsay kills the maid who was trying to help Sansa and told her about this, and they flayed her alive. So, you know, not great stuff over there in Winterfell.
Is there ever really, though?
At one point, maybe like the pilot.
Yeah.
So, obviously, and then speaking of near Winterfell, we have Stannis. So Stannis' army is not doing so well in the cold.
Yeah, they mentioned, you know, they've had 40 horses die in the night. They'll have more that's going to die tonight. And then all the sellswords abandoned them. And so they're running low on men. And Davos actually recommends a retreat back to Castle Black to wait out the winter. But as Stannis says, that could be several years.
So, yeah, he doesn't want to do that. He wants to press on. He doesn't care, obviously, how many men he loses. He just wants to keep going.
Well, also, if they were going to go back to Castle Black, Jon Snow was saying, we don't have the supplies to support our army and yours through a winter.
Mm. Yeah.
So they can't really go back. But I have a feeling usually episode 9 is when we get a big battle. I have a feeling it's going to be between Stannis at Castle Black.
Stannis? You mean Stannis at Winterfell?
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, Stannis at Winterfell.
Yeah. And the other big thing there, which was after that took place, the Red Woman told Stannis that the only way basically to come on top of like the war and everything was for King's Blood and to sacrifice his daughter. And he was not happy to hear that. That was the first time you've actually seen him like basically lash out at the Red Woman and basically like make her leave and like left her.
Yeah, and it was just the previous episode where we actually saw him tell the origin story of how she got the stone skin and what happened to her and actually have him show some emotion and that he really does care about her.
And he would, like, he tried everything he could to save her and he would not give up or not let her go.
So after doing that, he's not just going to sacrifice her.
Yeah, he did not want to hear that, and that led to a little confrontation with them. Speaking of daughters, back in Dorne, Jaime finally speaks with Marcella, who has no interest in leaving Dorne.
Yep, she wants to marry the prince. She's been living there for, I'm not sure how many years have passed since she, like, the timelines are kind of murky in Game of Thrones, but it's been several
like
years.
3 or 4 years, at least since Tyrion gave her away to Dorne.
Mm-hmm.
So the other part of that, obviously she's not leaving, is Bronn was poisoned. We had speculated that he got poisoned in the last episode, and he was poisoned by the Sand Snakes.
Yeah, because there's been lots of talk about how they fight with poisoned weapons, and when he got cut, they did like a tight shot of the cut on his arm.
Yeah. So, and the big thing here, obviously, you know, Game of Thrones and HBO needs to meet their boob quota, was that, you know, she was showing herself to Bronn and saying, you know, am I beautiful? Am I the most beautiful?
Yeah, and that seemed to like kickstart the poison because it elevated his heart rate, pumped it through his system quicker.
Yeah.
But then I thought they were actually going to kill Bronn off, which I was going to be disappointed about because he's one of my favorite characters. But then she just throws him the antidote, which was not how I expected that scene to go.
She doesn't throw him in. She throws him the antidote after she makes him say that she's the most beautiful woman she's ever seen.
Yeah, and then he's on the verge of dying.
Yep.
But so I'm happy they're keeping him alive, but that was not how I expected that scene to play out at all.
So, and then we get the meeting we've probably been waiting for a long time, which is Jorah and Tyrion finally reach Daenerys at one of the minor fight pits. And basically, like, they're like, she's upset with all the killing Daenerys and this fighting pit. And, like, basically, Jorah just storms out and doesn't kill anybody, but starts punching them in the face and knocking them out. And she seems to like this and smiling.
Yeah,
that
he just
not
takes
killing
out about
anybody.
Six people in a row with no problem at all.
And then finally, he takes off his mask and she sees it's him and she's disgusted. It just tells her to take him away.
I think Jacob called this. It was very much gladiator style of fighting under the mask and revealing who they were. He called that last week for that prediction.
So, and he does that, but basically Tyrion finally gets out and runs out and says, I am a gift. Yeah. I am Tyrion Lannister. And just that's like obviously where that episode ended. But with the other thing that happened in King's Landing, obviously, was Cersei, who went and visited the queen.
The High Sparrow.
The High Sparrow. Well, first she visited the queen.
Queen Marjorie.
Marjorie, which was a little epic little spat there.
And she was very pleased walking out of that cell of seeing kind of the state of decay that Marjorie was in.
Yeah. So then Cersei, obviously, in her little high, she's now happy, goes to the High Sparrow, but then finds out her cousin has been spilling some things to the High Sparrow, and she's taken away and put in a cell.
Which you knew as soon as he joined the High Sparrow, like that was going to play a major part in some way. I've just been kind of waiting for, you know, everything that he knew, all the secrets he knows to kind of come up and come out.
So it makes me intrigued how Tommen is going to go with this now.
So now both his mom and his wife are thrown in jail. You got to figure at some point he's just going to actually lose it and just storm the place because he's the king. He can do whatever he wants.
I would like to see his uncle come back. I think that would be a good, or his great uncle. I think it would be his great uncle, but to come back and actually, you know, take charge of some things and maybe, you know, get things back in order with leaving Cersei in a cell, obviously.
Yeah,
of course.
We want that to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, hopefully this will cause Tommen to kind of take charge and you probably will release them all, but then he's going to stand up for himself and start leading, actually, instead of letting everyone else manipulate him.
Definitely. So that's going to do it for our Game of Thrones recap for this week, next week. We have three more recaps for you, obviously.
I'm looking forward to, they tease for next week, Tyrion and Jorah chatting with
Daenerys.
I really want to see Tyrion and Daenerys interact because I think that's going to be really entertaining.
And how will she take, like, as an alliance or as an enemy?
Right.
We will see next week.
I think as an alliance.
We'll see. We'll see. And obviously, this is the Loot Crate month, and we'll be putting a YouTube of that on our Facebook and Twitter site, so make sure to check out that and how you can win something from this month's Loot Crate, which is Unite, Avengers-themed, obviously, for May.
I'm excited to see what's in it. Yeah, we'll post a link in the show notes to the YouTube page for it.
We don't even know yet. We'll find out with you when you watch it. So that's going to do it for this week.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us. If you guys have any questions or topics you'd like us to cover, email us at nerdspastics@gmail.com. And don't forget to like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter.
And subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yes. Scott, thanks for joining us this week.
No problem. It's
Thank
fun.
You.
Yeah. And we'll see you guys later. As always, stay nerdy.
I don't want to go.